Hey, everybody, and welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Amazing Avenues Minor League Podcast. I'm Steve Sipa, and I'm joined this week by Lucas Vlahos and Kat Thomas Henderson. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing okay.
Good.
How are you doing?
Okay. Well, it's Valentine's Day, so let's get into promote, extend, trade.
Oh, no.
We're three young guys living that bachelor life, so who are we going to promote, extend, or trade on this Valentine's Day? First up, we have someone that's worked their way up from the bottom, and they are in a high rank of importance, if power dynamics is your thing. First, we have Captain Morgan.
Okay, next, I see where this is going.
We're going to go get a little exotic and go south of the border with some Jose Cuervo.
Oh, God.
Finally, we're going to get a little kinky and go with none other than the Grey Goose itself.
You know, there are definitely times on this podcast when I feel unqualified, you know, because I'm like, man, there are a lot of other Mets podcasters who talk about baseball. And then I realized, no, I can have an opinion here. I'm okay. Now you're making me talk about alcohol. And I know there are very specific other Met podcasters who are very into alcohol. And I know nothing.
That said,
trade the rum, because rum sucks.
Yeah, that I can agree with. I hate
rum. Yeah, I agree with that too.
Right, so they do have the best commercials.
I had a bad time one time with that, so.
Go on.
No, that's it.
That's the story.
So me and rum don't mix.
Yeah, and I feel like everyone has one of those drinks. Like, just at one time I drank way too much X and Y happened, and now I can't drink X anymore.
Yeah, that's it for me.
With that. Well, one of my friends is rosé. Another one can't drink tequila anymore. A friend in undergrad, like, would smell vodka and get nauseous. You know, it's good times, good times. Extend the vodka, because it's the best base for, like, any mixed drink / cocktail / martini. And then tequila's good, too, so promote that.
Yeah, I agree completely there.
I was actually reading something that scientifically the best way to get drunk is to mix vodka and seltzer.
Sure, I could buy that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or a diet soda.
Vodka's just easy, right? Like, vodka doesn't taste like anything. There's no smokiness to bite through. There's no annoying, like, maybe you don't like the spices and whatever rum you're drinking. Or
yeah.
The herbs and whatever gin you're drinking. Oh, vodka's here for you because it's basically just diluted rubbing alcohol. Enjoy. Yep.
My go-to drink is vodka and Gatorade, much to the consternation of other Mets podcasters out there.
Gatorade?
Yeah.
Even I'm not that bad. That's an idea. You got to go with the Always Sunny approach and do grain alcohol in Gatorade. Right, juice!
I thought you were going to say Sunny Delight.
No, whenever unfortunately they're doing this in the context of the Phillies like winning the World Series, I think, but they get drunk on grain alcohol mixed with blue Gatorade. Right, juice.
Whatever works, that's my policy.
Not as bad as fight milk, so you can fight like a crow. Somehow I've never watched that show, but I have all these clips stored away in my head.
I've given it a bunch of chances, and I just can't, like, I'll watch it, and it's funny, I'll enjoy it, but I just can't get myself to, like, sit down and, like, watch it. Same thing with The Office until recently. I started watching The Office finally, like, 20 years too late, I guess.
I think there's just a lot of cringe, like, any cringy humor. I've lost the ability to talk.
Cringe, sure, you're not drinking.
Yeah. Oh, shit, you caught me. I'm drinking on the job again. No, any cringe humor I really struggle to, like, get through.
I just get embarrassed.
Yeah, exactly. Like, second, you get that secondhand embarrassment, like, can't do this.
Well, speaking of embarrassing,
oh boy,
let's talk about some stuff that Major League Baseball has done this week. It's pretty embarrassing. Mm-hmm. The realignment of the minor leagues, it is, I guess, officially complete. And all 120 teams that they offered professional development licenses, they all agreed. So No surprises there. We didn't think that anybody would not agree. And there's going to be four levels, low A, high A, double A, triple A. Again, no surprises there. But one notable thing that the official MLB press release is missing, and I don't know if this is going to be a permanent thing or if this is just kind of a temporary thing, but they're missing names. Pacific Coast League, International League, Eastern League, Florida State League, South Atlantic League, all that is gone.
Huh. I didn't even notice that.
Yep, it's just replaced with geographic designators. There's AAA East, AA Northeast, High A East, Low A Southeast, stuff like that. It's not a guarantee that it's going to stay like this. Hopefully, it's just, you know, temporary, and they need to figure out, okay, this is going to be the new Pacific Coast League. Okay, this is going to be the new South Atlantic League, blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, you know, Rob Manfred does not have any problem whatsoever of throwing away decades and centuries of baseball history for just no discernible reason. So you never know. And just using these geographic league names has led to some issues that people pointed out, because you could play in the High A East League in the West Division. You're High A East West, you know, things like that, and no good.
So I wouldn't be surprised if they get named, but the cynic in me is worried that they're going to get, like, advertised names, like the NHL did with their divisions this year.
Yeah.
And we're going to get, like, the Little Caesars AAA.
Guaranteed rate, single A East.
Exactly. And so, like, that's the cynic in me thinking, like, just thinking about that right now and how money is just running stuff. So,
Four Seasons Landscaping, double A North.
All right, that one I'll accept. But because the NHL has all these names that no one is even calling the divisions by. They're just like, here's the East Division anyway. Like, no fans are actually calling them that, but the NHL did it for money purposes.
Yeah, it really, like, saps the character. I mean, I'm not going to lie, I oftentimes mess up the league names when I'm trying to decide a level because my brain is dumb, but there's just a love. It makes the whole thing feel extra corporate if you take out the character inherent in having these long-standing names. And really, like, you're already making it feel so corporate by cutting out all these other teams. Why are you exacerbating that issue? You know?
Mm-hmm. And some of them, like the Pacific Coast League, that is, like, heavy-duty history. Like, the Pacific Coast League was almost a third league back in, like, the 40s and 50s. You know, Joe DiMaggio is very well known for his days playing with the Seals in the Pacific Coast League. That's just basically being like, oh, yeah, no more. Triple A West. Like, come on.
Yeah, there's actual real history, which is more so than I ever realized until I started looking into this stuff.
And the fact that it is just for no discernible reason. If they do say it's a, you know, the Pacific Coast League sponsored by Chevy, which would suck, but at least you're retaining that history to a degree. You know, if MLB is so strapped for cash that they need to do stuff like that, at least don't just trash everything completely.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully these are just placeholders and there'll be another official press release or official announcement or whatever a couple weeks down the line, restoring all the leagues to their proper terminology.
Hooray for baseball.
Yeah. Celebrating its history by destroying its history. Well, speaking of destroying things, I pretty much give up, and let's just destroy our top 25 list for 2021.
Oh, no.
This week, well, really last week, the Mets were involved in a three-team trade that saw Kansas City get Anthony Benintendi and a couple $1 million to cover his 2021 salary. The Boston Red Sox, they got Franchy Cordero and four minor league players. And the Mets got Khalil Lee, an outfield prospect from Kansas City, who I say with some pretty good certainty would be on our top 25 list. Little background about Lee. He was drafted in the third round of the 2016 draft out of Flint High School in Oakton, Virginia. And he was a two-way player. Kansas City thought that his future looked better as a position player, so they drafted him as an outfielder. And they bought him out of his commitment to Liberty University. And he finished out the rest of that season with the AZL Royals, their Arizona complex league team. And he hit pretty decently. And then they put him on a pretty aggressive developmental track. He went straight to full season ball in 2017, despite being fresh out of high school, and it was solid for the low A Lexington Legends that year. He was phenomenal the next year in 71 games with high A Wilmington, struggled a bit in his cup of coffee at the end of that year with double A Northwest Arkansas. And then he was solid the next year when he went back there, at double A again. Given that he hasn't played for real since 2019, he's going to be in a new organization. He's still kind of on the younger side, never really dominated. Maybe they start him out in Binghamton this year, but I don't really think that's too likely.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, he already has 158 games at AA under his belt. So odds are I think he's going to be ticketed for Syracuse. For 2021.
Yeah, that probably makes sense.
I think that's the smart thing to do. Is
yeah.
Especially since, like, the reports that we've gotten out of, not that we specifically, but that are out there about his alternate site are very positive. He tweaked his swing, much louder contact, much more tuned for power now, quieted down his hands. I'm not the right person to talk about this because my eyes don't work fast enough to see this, but that's what I noticed. And it's looked good. It apparently looked really good in camp. Not that the Royals opened up too much, but he's also had a couple of cool clips from, I think he's playing in the Dominican right now.
In Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico, excuse me. Yeah, a couple impressive clips out there. So there's something here. You know, it's a... assuming we don't count Andres Jimenez as a prospect, which he is, he would have been under the old rules, but isn't under last year, whatever. Lee is pretty comfortably a better prospect than either the ones they gave up for Francisco Lindor.
It's also the best player that isn't Andrew Benintendi in that trade. So I,
as much as I love Franchi Cordero, yeah, you're right.
I don't really, yeah, I love him too, but like, I think at this point, like, we kind of know what he is.
Yeah.
And I don't really know how the Mets did this or, like, why. Like, I just don't know why the Red Sox didn't just get Khalil Lee for Benintendi.
Look, yeah.
Like, when I was reading the whole thing, I was like, oh, the Mets probably gave up, like, a real player. And then it was someone they got 3 weeks ago
or
a month ago. It was very strange. Like, I'm not complaining, but it was a very interesting development all around.
In exchange, Mets sent Josh Winkowski to Boston. So for everyone that had their pre-ordered Winkowski jerseys, I'm sorry, but hopefully there weren't many of you out there. They're also going to be sending a player to be named later over to the Red Sox, but, you know, that is what it is. And odds are that the player that they're going to be giving up is not going to be as good as Lee is going to be.
Yeah, agreed.
I mean, they basically turned – I mean, we talked about Winkowski a little bit. He was pretty comfortably the third piece in that Steven Matz trade, along with Sheen. No, apparently none of us can talk today. We've all been drinking. Sean Reed Foley and Yency Diaz, who were much closer – not even much closer, but Winkowski wasn't quite as major league ready. So the Mets basically took a replaceable, injury-prone, $5 million back-end starter, dumped the money, and turned it into two optionable arms, and he's not a top 100 prospect, but he's like a top 150 prospect in baseball.
He was top 100 in 2019.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think he's still there.
He wasn't.
But top 150, definitely top 200, I think pretty comfortably top 150 as well.
There's
definitely potential for him to sneak back into the top 100 list.
Yeah, absolutely. If that swing change is real, mm-hmm. he's the top 100 prospect.
Basically, with Lee, the hit tool was always kind of below average, and that was impacting his power. He has plus raw power, but he wasn't really able to get it in-game power because he was just basically swinging a lot, striking out a lot, very long swing, stiff swing, making poor contact, that kind of thing. So if the hit tool is improved, he's making more contact, he's making better contact, and with better contact, he can, you know, get that power to play up in games. He's not like, he was never though, I can't even think of a good comparison though. He was never really a guy that, you know, just struck out a ton and, you know, just didn't get on base. He did walk a lot.
Yeah, he has a really good eye.
He's kind of like Brandon Nimmo, like Nimmo-mimian.
Jesus.
You know, that people actually criticize the fact that his eye is so good that he gets too passive sometimes, which is a criticism of Nimmo.
That's weird.
Also Dom Smith to a lesser degree.
But we don't want you to swing at balls. Like what?
Yeah. Like, I mean, I get it, but you know, it's developing a good eye is, you know, that it's a good base to have. And then, you know, if you you want to teach a guy to swing more or whatever. Okay. You could do that once he's has a good eye. So,
yeah.
Go ahead.
I was gonna switch to something else about his defense.
That's where I was gonna go. So you should go first, and then we can talk about where he belongs on this list, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, you know, regardless of how the bat works out, he is, I would say, an above average defender. Regardless where he plays, he has plus speed, so you know he can stick in center right now. He's going to have to improve his reads and his routes like any other player that's young and just kind of rely less on brute speed, I guess, raw speed, and more on experience if he wants to stay in center going forward. And if he's not able to do that and he loses a step, you know, he'll probably have to go into right field, but his arm is really good and he could hang in right field. So either you get, you know, a solid center fielder or an above average right fielder defensively. Either way, that's, you know, not a bad outcome with the glove.
Yeah, I mean, I think he seems like the classic, I'm going to be a center fielder for 3 or 4 years and then I'm going to get bigger in my late 20s and move to and be a plus corner guy, which certainly better than anything the Mets had right now, aside from Tim Tebow, of course, you know, not a zeroth prospect on the list.
We'll get into Tim Tebow a little bit later, but
It's like one. I think my favorite thing about this acquisition is he's instantly there. Like they now have some depth at the upper minors in the outfield. If Nimmo gets hurt or Conforto gets hurt or anyone gets hurt, like if they have to call him up in July or August, it won't be the end of the world. Mm-hmm. So before it was literally like Tim Tebow,
Malik Smith.
Yeah, like Malik Smith was there.
And my homeboy, how are you going to do my homeboy, Junushi Frogus? Like,
oh, that's true. But it was very much an organizational need that I don't really know how they would have solved it outside of signing like more Albert Almora types. And now this is a chance to have a guy like that who is going to be under contract, under team control forever, mm-hmm. like for like 8 years or whatever it is. Yeah. So it's just smart roster management. Even if the hit tool never super gets there and he's your fourth outfielder for 3 years, you have your fourth outfielder for 3 years who can play good defense and is a plus-plus runner.
Better than trading your Jordan Humphreys for that kind of player.
You have him at the minimum now, and you get to also work with him while he's a minor leaguer still because you don't need him now. So it's just one of those things where it's smart roster management on the margins that the old Mets wouldn't have done because – like, Jeff Wilpon isn't jumping into a three-team trade to get Khalil Lee, you know? So, like, he probably doesn't even know three-team trades are legal per the CBA. And the Mets have now done this twice, and they've gotten two interesting players out of it both times. So I always wonder how these come along, too. Like, does Sandy just, like, hop into the group text and is like, wait. Like, who's getting the Mets involved here, but that's a different question. But.
Is it like a league Slack where all the GMs are?
That's what I want to imagine.
How big is the gap between how we communicate and how GMs actually communicate? That's the behind the curtain look I want to have. Are they all like in a Discord call yelling, like hopping into VCs and yelling at each other constantly? I kind of hope so.
The Wilpons definitely had landlines and fax.
Uh-huh. Yeah, exactly. Absolutely.
But dot matrix fax.
Right. You constantly heard the old dial-up sounds in the Mets office before.
Jeff Wilpon couldn't complete a trade call because Fred's on the computer. And
get off the phone!
Dad, get off!
No, but to Thomas's point, like, this is something that I've noticed the last couple of years because I write grading pieces on every transaction the Mets make, or close to every transaction the Mets make in the offseason. And even, I'm going to say, like, the last couple of years, they've done an okay job building a major league team that has depth on the 25-man roster. The problem is the prospect pipeline hasn't been good enough to generate the depth beyond that, right? And that's not something you can really sign in free agency. You can't pick up guys who are optionable. You can't pick up and down arms. You can't have a useful outfield prospect that could be an up and a down guy. You can't pick up starting pitchers that could be up and down guys. It takes some creativity, or it takes having a better developmental system. And I think already we've seen that the results of that flaw in the last couple of years, right? The team would be good on paper it's a good 25-man roster, and then three people get hurt, which is normal. And the 40-man roster is just a goddamn shit show. And now the Mets have found a way to be creative and add a bunch of optionable arms, and now an optionable outfielder as well. And honestly, all of them still have some fun upside, right? Like Lee's a legitimate prospect, and the other guys they've added in this vein, like Yamamoto and Reed Foley and Lucchese, whatever, Diaz, like all of these guys are both optionable, viable back-end players, back-end 25-man types with various degrees of upside long-term. And it's just a level of competence, awareness of how good rosters are built, right? It seems like in past years, Jeff Wilpon's just looking at that 25-man Excel sheet and not realizing that the Dodgers roster goes like 43 deep, and that's why they're really good.
Yeah.
So where would you rank Lee on the top 25, 20, 21 list, if you are ranking him at all? I don't want to be too presumptuous here. I'm sorry.
I'd probably have him in my top 10.
Your top 10 for Thomas. End. You have Ronnie Mauricio, Francisco Alvarez, Matthew Allen, Brett Beatty, Peter Armstrong, Josh Wolf, RIP, JT Ginn, Mark Vientos, Jalen Palmer, and Chervian Newton.
He probably just replaces Wolf. Like, not maybe not one for one. I might move guys around. But, like, I feel like the middle to back end of the top 25 is still too question marky to put him below them. But I don't really think he deserves to be in the top 5 or 6 because those guys are like the actual real prospects in the system. So I think in that like 7 to 10 range is a good sweet spot for him now, because I wouldn't be surprised if the hit tool is real, like we were saying, like the swing changer, I mean, that he ends up in one of our better prospects because it's kind of thin, as we talk about a lot. So I wouldn't be surprised. Like, I think 7 to 10 is a good, I think Pipeline had him 7, and I think I actually kind of agree with that. I think that's a good spot for him considering everything else in the system.
Lucas, you have Allen, Mauricio, Alvarez, Beatty, Peter Armstrong, Vientos, Wolf, Palmer, Zapucki, and Killamay.
Obvious diatribe about ordinal rankings being dumb.
Yes, it should be tiers.
Yeah. In my mind, there's a clear tier A in this system with Allen, Mauricio, and Alvarez. And then who'd you say? I had Beatty fourth and then Peter Armstrong. I guess that's... I mean, maybe this is a hot take here, and I'm coming in a little too high on Lee, but I think I'd honestly have him fifth, maybe even fourth, because to me, he's right at the top of that second tier. I know I'm not going to make, like, in my mind, there's no way he's as good as any of the top three. And I think I'm a little bit lower on Pete Kerr Armstrong than the consensus, maybe.
Everyone voted him fifth except for me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a little surprising, actually. But to me, Lee is not that far off from what you hope Pete turns into, right? Like, in terms of what the role he fills. And I don't like, Lee has more raw power and less hit tool. PCA is probably a bit the opposite. Both solid center field defenders, at least for the time being. But Lee's on the, like, Lee's 200 AAA at bats of consolidation away from the majors and potentially being an impact player in the majors if that swing change is real and if it works against high minors arms outside of the alternate side and then in the majors. And there's a lot of ifs there, but there's a whole of a lot more ifs in getting PCA to the majors.
Mm-hmm.
And as for Beatty, that's not a comparison I've thought about a whole lot, actually. I was more thinking about the PCA one because I've lost track of what my top 25 is. They're just very different players at that point. But then again, we haven't seen Beatty really perform against at the level you'd like for a guy who's so bat dependent, which isn't to say he's disappointed. It's just nothing has like jumped out at you and he has little to no defensive value. So I might even put Lee fourth. And maybe that's a bit of an overreaction, but I think he's quite good and I very close to the majors. So.
It's fair. I would personally put him on my list sixth. So between four, six, and, you know, 7 to 10, that's about 6 or 7 if you put all of us together. But I think that's a fair place to put him. Like, I mean, we were saying.
Same tier.
Yeah, we're saying with tiers, exactly.
Yeah, it's the same tier. It's just where we view him on said tier. So. Mm-hmm.
We all have him in the same tier, basically, with Vientos, Beatty, PCA, Palmer.
Yeah.
In that, you know, that grouping.
So that's something else that I'll also note, and I quite like this, the depth the Mets have built. Lee has tons and tons of speed.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Something the Mets have really been lacking in recent years. And to be clear, like, Major League Baseball's trend is correct that steals aren't an efficient way to generate offense. But I do think there's perhaps been an overcorrection, and it's definitely something you can use off the bench or in certain roles. And this offseason, the Mets have added a lot of guys who do that. I mean, VR is possibly the best non-Billy Hamilton-based stealer in baseball. They have they added Malik Smith. They still have Fargus. And now Lee, who I certainly don't think they're adding him for his speed. I think we've talked about the long-term potential, but it's nice to have another potential guy who can come up and show that speed and contribute in that manner, which is, I mean, just another weapon to have around. We've seen how much Trey Turner fucks with every pitcher on the Mets staff, it seems.
He does.
So, in other words.
And also, speed is, like, it's not only just stealing bases. Speed is, like, being able to go first to third or score on a hit that you might not be able to score if your guy's a little slower. And, like, that's also very hard to quantify, like, what going first to third does to your, like, win probability or whatever, but I still think it's something that's important in, like, the actual, like, when a game is happening. It's one of those things you notice, and it's one of those things that it's like, ah, that helped that inning, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I think having guys like that is just also it's more fun, like, really fast-paced baseball players is fun. Like, Juan Pierre was fun, even though he was, like, a singles hitter. like, obviously he's not as fast as Juan Pierre because a few people in the world are, but speed is fun, and just getting more of it is an interesting way to build your depth where the Mets were just kind of like, this dude was 32 and used to hit.
So basically, to paraphrase, gotta go fast.
Just like Sonic.
Chicano Squad tells the story of Houston's first ever all-Latino homicide squad, formed in the 1970s to face a growing number of unsolved murders in their own community.
None of us knew what we were up against.
A story of five young officers torn between the neighborhoods that raised them.
I had a Mexican flag on my desk, and they told me, hey, the lieutenant doesn't want that Mexican flag over there.
And the badges they wore.
Some of my friends stopped talking to me.
Against impossible odds, they faced murders.
As soon as she walks outside, they shot her 14 times.
Cartels.
The Colombians were, man, they would execute you, kill you.
Kidnappings.
One morning they woke up and the baby was gone.
And more.
They just flew this guy in from Colombia and he's tracking you down. He wants to kill you.
But nobody wants to hear a story about a homicide squad that failed, right? My name is Cristela Alonso, and this is the story of the Chicano Squad. Listen to Chicano Squad now on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
All right, so trading for Khalil Lee makes the Mets minor league system look better on paper. Helps the Mets in a practical way, too, because it gives them an outfielder, like we were saying, who should be ready for a major league cup of coffee or maybe even a little bit more within a year or two. But, you know, Lee is still far from a sure thing. We do need those swing changes. We need to see them and hope that they are real and that, like Lucas was saying, that he can handle, upper minors hit pitching and obviously major league pitching. The thing with the Mets though is we really gotta hope that that hit tool did increase and improve. You know, and that he'll put more balls in play and unlock that power because there really isn't too much going on in the minors when it comes to outfielders. We, surprisingly though, did have six outfielders on our 2021 top prospect lists. The most experienced of that bunch is Stanley Consuegra, who played 51 whole games.
That's with the bad.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Not even in 2019, in 2018.
Jeez.
Yeah.
That's really bad.
The highest ranked guy, Pico Armstrong, was drafted last year, doesn't have a single professional game. The next guy after him, Isaiah Green, he's not even in the system anymore. And he didn't even have any games under his belt either. Then there was Freddy Valdez, Alexander Ramirez, Adrian Hernandez, and the aforementioned Consuegra. And they're all basically in the same exact boat. They're all, I don't want to say the same player because upsides are different. Those first two are projected to be better than the second two, but they're all very young and they really have no meaningful playing time under the belt since it's all come either in the Dominican or, you know, at the GCL complex.
Yeah, like for the purposes of major league roster building, they're the same player.
Yeah, they don't pretty help. Much. So, the Mets do have a little versatility on the major league team, as we were saying. They made a couple of shrewd signings with Albert Almora and Jonathan Villar and Jose Martinez. And in the event that they do need to call up another outfielder, there are, you know, Lucas's guy, Junyoshi Fargas and Malik Smith and Drew Ferguson. Those will be the guys that.
I forgot about Drew Ferguson.
Yeah. They'll get the first call. Mm-hmm. They'll definitely get their first call. You know, and nobody's expecting those guys to suddenly become MVPs, but that list doesn't really inspire too much confidence. And those are the type of players that usually, you know, if they do get off to a hot start, they will be given the option like, okay, do you want to be released so you can sign with another team that you may have more opportunities with? So there isn't even, we don't even necessarily have a guarantee that they will be around for the entire season. And given the lack of depth, outfield depth in the upper minors, if those guys either don't get off to good starts and just kind of struggle in AAA and demonstrate that they will not be able to be meaningful contributors in any way, or if they do get off the hot starts and, you know, want to pursue opportunities elsewhere where they may get actual, you know, a better shot at actual major league playing time, that leaves, the Mets in a pickle. If you go back a couple of years, let's start with 2016, because the 2016 draft 4 years ago, that should be paying dividends at this point. The Mets picked three outfielders over the course of those 40 rounds. Gene Cohn, who was drafted in the 10th round. Ian Strome was drafted in the 22nd round. And Jeremy Wolf was drafted in the 31st round. None of them were high upside guys to begin with. And Gene Cohn and Ian Strome were both released in 2018 and Wolf in 2017. So that entire draft looking at outfield was completely irrelevant, complete miss. Nothing. Literally got nothing from that. Go
Shocking.
Over. Yeah, well, yeah. Move on now to 2017, and they took four outfielders. Quinn Brody was taken in the 3rd round. Matt Winoker was taken in the 5th round. Jack Schneider was in the 10th round, and Rafael Gladue was in the 16th round.
Brody and Winoker. Hit after hit.
Yeah. Brody and Winoker, Stanford teammates, not really the highest upside guys to begin with. Schneider retired literally in his second game as professional after a freak foul ball incident. And then Rafael Gladue has a pretty interesting story. He retired in 2018. Then he came out of retirement in 2019 to play with the Mets because they needed someone to play. And then they didn't give him much playing time, and he retired for a second time. So
he's gone full Michael Jordan with this.
Yeah. So again, now 2016, they got nothing. 2017, they got nothing.
Stop drafting Stanford swing outfielders.
I mean, that goes without saying.
I say as someone who was high on Brody when he was drafted because I saw him beat the shit out of Cal a couple times when I was still in school, so.
Move on to 2018 now. And do we want to talk about outfielders drafted in 2018? I'm not really sure if I'm ready or not.
Oh.
No, they didn't have a first round pick, if you remember.
That's true. Yeah. All right. Well, then their second pick was Ross
because
Adolph.
They went over the luxury.
Right. I remember this reality.
Yeah. Remember for Cano, they signed him.
It's a little depressing to look at this like awesome young core they have and say, man, the one thing they could really use is a great young center fielder. Pulls up previous trades. Checks most recent prospect list.
Whoops.
Shit.
Well, that never happened. Ross Adolph, they drafted David Miranda, and a prep outfielder who I was a big fan of, Denzel Clark, but he didn't sign. He went to California State Northridge. But Ross Adolph, they traded him.
I was a fan of Adolph. I was kind of mad.
Yeah. David Miranda, he was released, and if only they had a first-round pick.
That was the Davis trade, right? Adolph,
yes.
And,
so, like, it
Adolph
ended up,
and Santana.
Like, it ended up working out because J.D. Davis is he's a big leaguer, like a natural one. And even if he's a bench player, I think that's what his preferred role should be. That's still a cheap bench player, so I'm fine with it after the fact. But in the moment, I was kind of mad.
Yeah. So that's three drafts in a row where the Mets did not get a single viable outfielder. 2019, you know, nobody really is going to be ready from that. Yeah. You know, there's no high-level college guys, so. And obviously 2020, nobody at the Mets selected. So if the Mets need an outfielder, obviously you have the Amoras and the guys on the roster right now, and there is a little bit of versatility. You know, guys like J.D. Davis can quote-unquote play in the outfield and Jeff McNeil. So, I mean, there is some, there are matchups that the Mets can finagle with, but if they needed an outfielder and, you know, they needed to go to the minor leagues, pluck someone from AAA or possibly AA, you know, you have Janusik Fargus, the Smiths, the Fergusons, but if they don't look like options, then what? You have the Quinn Brodies, you have the Matt Winokurs, you have the Tim Tebows, like, that is not something that is going to work out well.
Hey, Tim Tebow just got an invite to spring training again for reasons.
Yeah, for shirt selling reasons in a pandemic.
I'm fine with that. It is what it is. I mean, if you haven't accepted that at this point, it's been like
you may
four
not like
years.
It, but accept it.
Yeah, right. Basically. He's just going to keep coming back until he retires.
There, I made a wrestling reference. You proud of me?
We are. But all of this really just highlights to how important it is that the Mets extend Michael Conforto.
Yes.
He is an everyday major league player. He is an above average major league player. He is a Met. And he should stay a Met. Because if he does not, and if he leaves, well, that's just a massive hole that the Mets are going to have.
You're just going to have to sign someone else anyway.
And they're all worse next year. Like,
yep. Yeah.
Unless they swing a trade for someone, which obviously we can't predict. Like, I can't sit here and be like, oh, yes, they'll trade for Aaron Judge or whatever. Like, it's
this
impossible.
This front office leaks nothing.
Exactly. It's impossible for us to know. Like, we couldn't pencil in Francisco Lindor 3 months ago or whatever it was. So, like, they kind of have to. And if they extend Conforto, then they could basically they could bridge the gap in between all the young guys coming up. Like the Pete Crow Armstrongs and the Freddie Valdezes and everyone else. Because by the time those guys are old and Nimmo is done with his ARB, and you probably, if you have enough money, you could see if he wants to extend too, because I don't know what he wants to do. But you could kind of not worry about how bad your upper minors outfield depth is, because there's no place for any of those guys to play.
We're going to see a lot of big brain takes about letting Conforto go, putting McNeil back in the outfield. Yeah. Put it in, having Cano back at second base, just
McNeil plays right and Nimmo plays left or whatever, and there might even be a DH next year, so that takes away another outfielder and quote unquote outfielder in Dom Smith.
I forgot about Dom and
his
quote unquote outfield play.
I mean, he's the starting left fielder if the season started tomorrow, like unless they're gonna galaxy brain it and start Almora, but. They could really just kind of get away with not having upper minors depth with the outfielders and sign fourth outfielders and fifth outfielders if you lock up Conforto, because then it doesn't matter if Khalil Lee is like good, then he could force his way into the lineup. But if he's not, then you already have those spots locked up. So they really got to do that.
Kind of the way it was with the pitching for a while was they had very good pitching, and like everybody except for Bartolo Colon is basically like under 25, 26, whatever it was, like, you know, 2 or 3 years ago. So they could get by with just kind of picking, you know, a depth guy here or there and just kind of winging it from there. Yeah. They would be able to do that if they lock up the outfield for the near future.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think in an ideal world, and perhaps this is dreamcasting a bit, I think you're re-signing Conforto, Lee is taking over center field, and
yes.
Dom's moving to DH, and then you're doing whatever with Cano so that McNeil can stay in the lineup still, right?
I would assume Cano played his last game as a Met, whether they buy him out or...
Yeah, I don't want to... Yeah, whatever, right? But McNeil should be on the infield somewhere, not... on the grass. So in an ideal world, you still need Conforto around.
Yes.
What if he goes back? What if Cano goes back to Seattle?
Fine. I don't give a shit.
They literally got everything from us.
You took everything. I've been watching a lot of WandaVision. I just have the line from Endgame in my head now. That show slaps, even if you're not a Marvel fan. It still slaps. Very good.
Well, let's finish up with the Wilponry of the week. And I guess that trade was a massive Wilponry, but this week I think consensus goes to Mitch McConnell, who literally stated on record that he says that, you know, Trump is basically responsible for all the events at the Capitol, but then voted against finding him accountable because
pretty well
political 4D chess. I don't know.
I thought you were going to go with the lovely "We Tried" tweet we got on James Paxton yesterday. It's like a
"We Tried" tweet at like midnight.
Oh, I'm not even aware of
Paxton to the Mariners.
Yeah, they got outbid by Seattle for Paxton.
I know that, but I didn't know that there was an actual there was a "We Tried" tweet.
Yeah, basically,
Martino,
they
right?
To Heyman, they were like, "We got outbid," was basically the leak. Of the was basically the long and short of the Heyman thing.
Hmm.
Sure felt very Wilpon-y. Whatever.
Oh, the exact words were Mets tried for James Paxton but were outbid. So
hell.
I could see Sandy Alderson going at a press conference and just being like shrugging, like, "Yep, we tried." That would not go over well.
Dude, look, like this off season has been so much good. Like they made a really great big trade. We've talked a lot, even on this pod, about they did a Dodgers level job of building out the roster margins, which is something they've never done, and they just refused to make the last one or two major league moves they need to make.
They've had a really bad month. From January 15th when Hand was supposed to be a Met. Like, that's when Rosenthal tweeted that. And then
That sounds like, that feels like so long ago.
Yeah, that was January 15th. I went back and looked. And then this is almost a month to the day of we're recording this. This will come out a month from that tweet. And pretty much they've just swung and missed at every single free agent.
Aaron, we have added loops, brother.
Yeah, right? Like,
may I have a loop? Anyway.
All right. Well, if anyone has any comments, questions, whatever, you can send us an email at our email address from complextoqueens@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I'm at Steve Sipa. Lucas is at ElVajos343. Ken has been very silent this episode. He is at KenLevin91. And Thomas is at SadMetSeasonSZN. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast from, rate and review it, and of course, thank you for listening. And we will be back next week. And until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.